Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Trankelberg, and Andre Kleiner's joined me. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Fred. Good to be here.
Well, you mentioned when we were leading up to doing some recording, the worst four-letter acronym in reliability.
MTBF.
That's right. And you did it kind of cautiously, not sure how exactly I'd react. But it about the time we started talking about what we wanted to talk about, and you mentioned it, I also got some feedback and some questions through email. From some students that I'm having a class, and also just directly through LinkedIn and from listeners to the show. And there still seems to be a little bit of confusion about MTBF and what it means and when you can use it and how do you know when it's appropriate and not and so on. Now, aside,
according to your website, we shouldn't ever use it. Never, ever again.
That's right. And my primary reason for saying that is that it's so commonly misunderstood.
It is.
Right. And so I think
let's
set that aside for a minute. Now, it is a calculation, right? We take total time and divide by total failures. And one of the confusion pieces I got was somebody was trying to say that, well, when you do that calculation, it doesn't matter what the underlying distribution is. It could be exponential or skewed or not skewed or normal or log normal or any shape you want. You will be able to calculate an MTBF value. And if it's exponential or a Weibull with a slope parameter, the beta value is 1, which is an exponential distribution, then that means that the MTBF value, say it's 50,000 hours, implies that at 50,000 hours of use that you'll have 2/3 fail, or it'd be the 63rd percentile to failures.
Right.
Right? But when you do a normal distribution, right, if the underlying actual distribution of whatever it is you're measuring and monitoring and repairing and so on fails with a normal distribution frequency.
Yeah, or the symmetrical distribution.
Right. Then the mean is at the 50th percentile. And if it's really skewed one way or the other, it could be other percentiles of proportion of failing. So even as a mean, it moves depending on what's underlying it. I used to always think, and I often would say that if you only provide me an exponent or only provide me an MTBF value and no other information,
then you assume it's exponential.
Yeah,
right?
It's about the only thing you can do because you only are given one value. In exponential, you can solve with only one parameter. So it's like, that's the only thing I got. I'll stick it in an exponential and drive on. Usually I object vehemently, but I'll see the website at nomtbf.com for that.
Yes. Yeah, we know that website.
Right. But where's that confusion come from, though?
I think, and we might have discussed this before, I think the main confusion with MTBF is just the terminology. You could say, okay, mean time between failures, and people immediately assume that, okay, this is the time from one failure to another failure in the population, which is totally wrong. And it's like, okay, if my MTBF is 10 years, then I need to wait on average 10 years before the next thing fails after the first
one. And that seems to be the most naive misunderstanding that it's a failure-free period between failures.
Yeah, so that's why I'm a little more neutral to MTBF, but I don't like using it at all, and most of the time we try to use failure rate, which is for exponential distribution would be just 1 over MTBF, mm-hmm. and for other distribution it's not going to be that simple. It's basically going to be a function of time. Right. The same way is if you using something other than exponential distribution, your MTBF is also sort of a function of time, even though you can calculate kind of average value, or if your system is non-repairable, then it's MTTF. That's which right. is, I think, a lot better term than MTBF.
Well, I beg to differ there, but but one of the things I see is organizations will say, well, the MTBF value changes depending on how long of a duration we look at it. So they have factory equipment. And if they do a very short run, say a 4-hour product run, their MTBF value will be very high. They'll have lots of failures and adjustments and equipment downtime more frequently occurring. Most of them are very quick to fix. But if they let that same setup run for a week, then over the week, they calculate an MTBF value, and it's much, much lower than if it's just calculated over the first day. And I looked at that and went, now, the underlying assumption that we almost always make is that it's a constant hazard rate and an exponential distribution. Now, why would that value change if I just run the equipment longer versus not running it longer? And it's because the failure rate in the early first shift was much, much more likely to occur. And they had a decreasing failure rate as they made adjustments, refined the setup, and kind of gotten to the rhythm of production. It just failed less often. Yet they vehemently refused to move off of MTBF. And they just kept saying, well, it's MTBF over the day or the shift or the week or whatever. And I'm like, you can't even compare these anymore. You know?
Yeah, and yeah, there's a lot of problems with MTBF. My personal thing with MTBF is it comes from reliability prediction, mm-hmm. which kind of was a dying activity for many years until functional safety became a big thing.
Well, you mentioned that one time. It's a new standard or a revised standard in Europe.
It's a lot more than that. It's basically a whole series of standards. There's IEC, and I'm trying to remember the number, something like 62508, but don't quote me on that, which mm-hmm. is kind of mother of all functional safety standards. Mm-hmm. And the one I deal mostly is ISO 26262 for automotive, mm-hmm. and this is probably the biggest document. The first version had like 10 parts, and each part was like, I don't know, 100 plus pages.
Now the $200 new one, each.
Oh, yeah, at least. Yeah. I don't think it's that cheap. And the new one coming out in 2018, it's going to have 13 parts. And this is like a nightmare. But where I basically interact with this is mostly on part 5 and part 10, where you need to do reliability prediction, which we all know is really not a high value added activity. But now you have to do that. And your choices are to use one of the existing handbooks, which, you know, using MTBF or constant failure rate. And believe it or not, even MIL Handbook 217, which has not been updated for at least 25 years, is still a valid source of reliability prediction.
Yeah. And this is for functional safety, right? So this is saying if this part has a low MTBF, it's a safety risk.
Well, it's a little I'd say a little different angle. Basically, you're making a system, you identify which is safety critical. Mm-hmm. For example, like in the vehicle, it's going to be your airbag. Obviously, it's safety right. critical. But only that, it's even your engine controller also can be classified as safety critical.
If you're at speed and it shuts off control of your engine, then that's a problem. Yeah.
So basically, that standard kind of tells you, okay, you need to follow certain certain design procedures, certain systems engineering procedures. And by the way, we give you what's called ASIL level, which stands for Automotive Safety and Integrity Level. And you need to meet that ASIL level. And one of the ways to prove is reliability prediction, showing that your fit rate or your failure rate or hazard rate, whatever you want to call it, is below certain value. Right. And the way you do that, you look at all your components, which are safety critical, and calculate your lambda.
Right.
Again, something we used to do, like, I don't know, not we, like, but
yeah, a parts comp prediction type.
Like 30, 40, 50 years ago. And basically, there's really little change. We tried to change it a little bit. Like, I basically wrote an SAE international standard how to calculate failure rate based on the field return data, which is still not a perfect way to do that. But in my mind, it's still a lot better than using any of the existing handbooks, which give you a bunch of empirical equations, how to account for this factor, a bunch of fudge factors, a lot of models.
Oh, yeah. Well,
where you get the number, which probably have very little to do with reality.
Oh, I'm sure you're familiar with the paper. It was, I'm drawing a blank on his name, Jeff, I believe it was. He was he's a professor in England, one of the universities, and they did a study. They had a bunch of circuit boards, a handful of circuit boards that they had pretty decent field data for. So they knew roughly or fairly accurately, I should say, the field reliability performance of these circuit boards with a pretty decent sample size out there that they were monitoring. And then they had, I guess he had a bunch of his students do these predictions. And there was the British standard, there's a French standard, there's a Chinese standard.
Yeah, FIDES, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ones. And so they just kind of followed the rules, you know, did their predictions. And it was, I think, minus 100% plus 600% were the errors. And it was, you could have just guessed a number more accurately.
Oh, yeah. There's several articles on that showing, like, even if you're using, I'm not even talking about MIL handbooks or 17, some of the current standards, which are approved by functional safety standards, like maybe Siemens and ISO 62380 and FIDES and several others. Mm-hmm. And you just basically calculate the same, take the same circuit, use all those standards, you're going to get like several, like two orders of magnitude difference in your results. So, right. I mean, what kind of confidence you have in this?
But well, again, if you're trying to get your ASIL level, you use the standard that gives you the best lowest number. Failure rate. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, but again, it's like it was a dying activity until functional safety came along, and now it's thriving activity. And yeah, I even had an interesting discussion, and I would call it argument, with my co-author, Patrick O'Connor, when we were working on the fifth edition of Practical Reliability Engineering. And he was very adamantly against all this reliability prediction methods, mm-hmm. and rightfully so. But we were kind of arguing if we need to include all those new standards or handbooks into the book. And my argument was, yeah, it's not value-added activity, but now you have to do it, so it has to be in the book. And luckily, I was able to convince him that this is probably the right way to go. So we have
You have a warning section in there, though, too, saying, you know, don't use this to make business decisions. This is just to get through the standard.
Yeah, it was a compromise we reached. So basically, yeah, we put a lot of disclaimers saying, okay, this is really not a good number, accurate number, but okay, if you have to do this, okay,
here's the methods.
Here's the methods. Here's what standards available, and we have a pretty big section kind of going over different standards, different handbooks, and saying, okay, this is based on this, this is based on that, and some.
Well, I'm glad you got it in there, because I think there's power in knowledge. If we know what the limitations of these tools are, then we won't use them blindly. And because you know as well as I do, and I think it's a big part of why Patrick was objecting to it, is that somebody's going to take the old Mild Handbook 217, dump their parts list into it, come up with a number, and it goes onto a data sheet to represent the expected reliability performance in the field. So it's just plain misleading your customers.
Of course, really, yeah. And like I said, he was 100% correct. I mean, no question about it. But again, with all those new things kind of bringing, resurrecting this activity, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like we didn't have any choice but basically create a section and go over all those standards and handbooks and explain what's in there. But
you know, one of the arguments I've heard is that, well, what do I use instead? And you mentioned using your field data. And even if you don't have any field data, then if it's really important that you represent the reliability performance in your sales process accurately, then it's accelerated testing, it's beta testing, you know, sites with your customers and collect data. There are even engineering judgment as the basis for your estimate is better than doing a parts count prediction. And so I'm people often say, well, what do I use instead? And in the functional safety world, it's a thou shalt use one of these methods and for this analysis. And I think the caveats and the warnings are appropriate is don't use that for anything else. Don't make a decision on your warranty accruals based on those numbers. And I think people forget there are many other methods to get a reliability estimate, and all of them will be more accurate.
Yeah, and this is exactly the reason why we actually created this SAE international standard, because actually the functional safety standards, they don't prohibit you from using anything, I mean, other sources other than handbooks. And if you have field data, you can use that. So we basically wrote this standard saying, okay, if you have a field data, here's what you need to do with it to get a reasonably accurate failure rates, which you can use for for functional safety or even for warranty prediction. In fact, we created, using this method, we created our own database at Delphi, and failure rates, and we've used it a few times to predict warranty, and actually we kind of was surprised it was reasonably accurate, mm-hmm. because it was based on field data, not right. on some esoteric equations with like 20 fudge factors.
Well, yeah. So there's plenty of confusion in and around MTBF. Unfortunately, these standards repropagated and so on. But I think our bottom line message is that don't use it for anything serious. <You know? laughs> go get real, you know, get a better estimate than using a parts count prediction. And hopefully we can convince the functional safety people that they should de-emphasize using the parts count type stuff. It's just, it's not good for what their end goal is to create safe systems. So I think those are all issues, but it's, yeah, in the danger of getting me off on another tangent on MTBF, let's ask our customers. Wrap it up. So if you agree with us, that's great. You know, we'd love to hear from you and check out the site nomtbf.com. If you don't agree with us and you think parts counts, predictions, and the use of MTBF is just fine, well, we'll still talk to you, but it'll be a different conversation. So take another look at it. If you are using MTBF and if you're using parts count predictions, take a closer look at how it's understood and what information you're actually getting. Don't just assume it's okay. I think Andre and I are speaking from experience that it's not okay in general, unless you're very lucky. So I don't know if we got the point across, Andre. We'll see what kind of response we get. And so I should mention they should go over to reliability.fm. You can find the Speaking of Reliability show and places to leave comments and more notes and handouts and links and stuff like that. So, but please get in touch with us. Let us know what you think. So with that, Andre, I think we can wrap this one up.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.